the Sweatshop Podcast with your host, the Sick Man, VCC.
Hello, everyone. It's February 28th, 2019. Thanks for tuning in to the Sweatshop Podcast with your host, the Sick Man VC. I know, it's been too long. It's been nearly 2 months and a new year started, 2019, since I recorded the last episode. Rest assured I wasn't procrastinating, though. I, of course, celebrated the holidays with family and friends. I watched the coming of a new year. And I also spent time revamping my music studio so I could work on more episodes and better episodes of this podcast, and I can work on my new album coming to you soon. Can't wait for that. On today's episode, I want to talk about a few cool things. If you've been following my website, sickmanvc.com, you know that this podcast is just an extension of that. I talk about all the web content, the blogs, about what I'm passionate about, whether it's music, art, new books I'm reading, film I'm watching, or sports, or philosophy, or the rest. Today I want to talk about the new drawings I'm working on, which were inspired by Studio Ghibli, the legendary Japanese animation studio for films like Ponyo, Spirited Away, My Neighbor Totoro, to name a few. I'm working on a new collection of drawings depicting famous scenes from those movies, but putting a dark fantasy art twist on them, as if they need them. I also want to talk about, on today's episode, one of my all-time favorite musicians, an inspiration, just an amazing artist in every sense of the word, and an amazing man, Ice Cube. He came out with a new album recently called Everything's Corrupt, so I want to talk a little bit about his influence on me and my impressions of his newest album. Finally, I'm going to have a little fun and talk about how old I turned, the number 42 to be exact. I hope you enjoy. There's no denying the magic of Studio Ghibli. As a young artist, I remember seeing my first Ghibli film, which was the American translation or English translation of Princess Mononoke. That film was powerful to me as a young artist. The visuals alone just were spellbinding. I remember the lush visuals, the smooth animation, the realistic yet fantasy portrayal of the characters, when it was coupled with the powerful themes of man versus nature and the music and the ambience, it was magic. I watched that same spell be cast on my two daughters, 6 and 4, when they saw their first Ghibli film. This is the type of magic that we say Disney films have over people in this culture and country. I believe Studio Ghibli, and perhaps I'm biased because I'm half Asian, but I believe them to even have a more powerful effect than some of the Disney classics. Ironically, Disney would go on to buy the Ghibli catalog and re-release them with English translations and American actors, which was great because that's what we watch in this household. But regardless of which language you watch, the stories are classic. So for my new drawings, if you remember, I had done a monster collection where I was taking old 50s and 60s, well, even newer than that, but just taking legendary monster movies and drawing scenes from those. I decided I wanted to stay dark. I wanted to stay fantasy art, but I wanted to take something that was also influential on me as an artist. So I thought, A lot of Japanese animation from the time I was a kid was influential on my art style, my visual art style. And then I thought about the very best and most impressionable animated films, Japanese animated films. And of course, I came back to Studio Ghibli, which we constantly watch in my household with my two daughters. I decided I was going to take scenes from these movies and draw my own interpretation of those scenes. I would take these scenes and remove them from the cartoony kids realm, and I would put a dark fantasy art twist on them. Some of the films, like Nausicaa and Princess Mononoke, they actually stand on their own as far as dark and fantasy art look, a visual look. But I wanted to take some of the fidelity that I put in my graphite drawings and apply that in some of my own interpretation of what the characters would look like if I was recreating the scenes in the world of art. The first two I started with, the first one was My Neighbor Totoro, which is one of my kids' favorites. It's probably the most kiddie of the bunch and the first major release by Studio Ghibli. This is the story of two young girls who move to a house in a rural area when their mom is sick at the hospital, the urban hospital. So they move with their dad. Upon moving to this house, they encounter spirits of the forest, or a spirit of the forest, and a character named Totoro. This fun film is it's a timeless classic for kids. If you have young kids and they watch this film, it has the type of magic that Mickey Mouse might have on kids, or leaves that kind of impression. It's very playful, it's fun. So for my first drawing, I wanted to take Totoro, the actual character. There's a scene in the movie where May, the younger of the two girls, while her sister is in school, she's wandering, and her dad's working in his office from the house in the countryside. She wanders off. She sees what mysterious characters in her backyard, and she begins to follow them through her garden and under the house, and ultimately it leads her to a huge camphor tree in which the character Totoro, who's a large feline type character, is sleeping inside the hollow of the tree. So I wanted to take that scene and draw it. So when I put May in my drawing, I wanted the hollow of the tree to be darker than it's portrayed in the movie, and I wanted to take Totoro, instead of making him look so playful, I wanted to accentuate the feline features and make him dark and brooding than he looked in the cartoon. So that was my first drawing. I completed 2 days on that, so check out the website to see the progress over the 2 days. And then the second drawing I worked on was a scene from probably what's called the ultimate classic, or the pinnacle of Studio Ghibli's. It's the masterpiece, if you will, Spirited Away. This one's probably my girl's favorite of the films. But it's the story of a young girl who is wandering in the countryside with her parents when she's moving to a new neighborhood, and they come across an abandoned amusement park. That is actually the grounds for spirits, where they cross over from distant lands and they go to a bathhouse to bathe themselves. But anyway, it's very psychedelic, very Alice in Wonderland, if you want to compare it to anything. But in one part of the movie, she encounters what she thinks is a harmless spirit outside of her bathhouse, which is ultimately named No Face. So she lets him in the bathhouse, which she's working at. and unbeknownst to her, his intentions were not good. He's not one of the good spirits that's visiting the bathhouse. He becomes obsessed with the character Sen, who let him in, and he begins to pose as a friendly spirit to all the bath workers, and he creates fake gold using his spiritual powers or magic, and they think this gold is real gold, and they go into a frenzy over his visit, and they start accommodating him and bidding to get the most gold. But behind the scenes, he's slowly devouring each bath worker in an attempt to get closer to Sen, who is working in the bathhouse. The scene I depicted is when it reaches a crescendo, and he takes the hideous form of his spirit self, and he has a large mouth which he's using to consume the bath workers with, that opens up in his chest. And in this scene that I drew, he's like turning into like a mud-like consistency, and his mouth is open, and he's trying to devour everybody in the bathhouse to get to Sen. So check that one out. I spent 2 days on that one, so you can see day one and day two progress on my website, sickmanvc.com.
Music.
I don't even know where to begin with this guy. Not only is he one of the biggest, if not the biggest, influence on me musically, but his legendary status cannot be overstated. You're talking about a guy that came from a group that changed the course of music history, as well as a complete genre of music, that later went on to become a successful Hollywood director, writer, actor, an African-American entrepreneur. I mean, if you ain't guessed it by now, I'm talking about Ice Cube. Whenever Ice Cube comes out with something, just because his influence on me as an artist, I always pay attention. I mean, there's no denying if he stopped making music altogether that you could take just his non-music career and you could say this guy is a legend, whether you're talking about Hollywood or entrepreneurship. Regardless, his music is always the biggest part of his career in my eyes. When I first heard N.W.A. and Fuck the Police and Straight Outta Compton, to find out that he was responsible for the lyricism for all the group members except for maybe MC Ren, and his successful solo career, I cannot state how much he influenced me as a hip-hop musician, whether it was how I wrote lyrics, the idea of what I could say, pushing the envelope politically, making diss tracks on another level. I mean, I could literally do a complete podcast episode talking about his career and its influence on me and music and culture. So when he came out with a new album, Everything's Corrupt, I had to listen to it, of course. Now, I'll be honest, a lot of Ice Cube's later work, like many legendary musicians, was not what got him to the dance, if you will. I mean, it's like when you go to a Rolling Stones concert or a Prince concert, rest in peace. They have a new album, they're promoting that new album with their tour, but what do you want? You want the classics. So when I listen to a new album from a legendary artist like Ice Cube, I don't have the expectation that they'll be able to achieve that classic status again, but I also hope that they get back to the roots of what made them great. And I try, music is subjective, but I try to listen to it with an open mind and see where they're at as an artist and see if they're trying to get back to their essence. Ice Cube's new album, which came out right before the turn of 2019, called Everything's Corrupt. Just the title insinuated that he was going to go back to the form, the Ice Cube that I like best. If you're talking about an Ice Cube from the Predator days and the Death Certificate days, well, I should do them vice versa, sequentially. But that was a political artist, a political gangster rap, if you will. He still honed in on his gangster rap roots with the explicit nature of the music, but he took it to a next level as a solo artist from his NWA days, and he became on the cutting edge of political commentary. He did it intelligently. He did it witty. He was humorous. He was violent. He was dark. He embodied everything that would get your attention and everything that would be timeless when you're cutting to years later and listening to music, because his music would actually transport you back into the culture politically at that time. Like with Predator, when he released that album during the LA riots and the Rodney King incident, it really captured the tone of what was going on at that time. Death Certificate, to me, was his greatest album to date, just because it was a firestorm of controversy when it came out. I mean, he was broaching subjects such as killing Uncle Sam or killing the political establishment. He was accused of racism with songs like Black Korea, where he talked about boycotting Asian grocery stores in the hood because it wasn't for the blacks that lived in that area. Even as an Asian American, I was not offended by this. I really understood the essence of what was going on and what he was saying. I'm not justifying it by any means, but he had songs like No Vaseline, which on that same album, Death Certificate, which was, he took diss tracks against other artists to the next level when he was talking about his former group in WA. When this came out and it was put at the end of Death Certificate, it was just shocking. Because he not only took this to a personal, violent level, he was just unfiltered, naming names, associations that no other rapper would have done. Now, mind you, taking it to this level, some would say, ultimately took it to a violent level that you got with Tupac and B.I.G., but that's another argument. The fact is he did what he did when he was with NWA, and he was saying things on record that nobody else or everybody else seemed afraid to say. And it was shocking. It was in your face. It was impressionable. And it still holds up the test of time. So with Everything's Corrupt, with a title like that, I was hoping that he would go back to this political form, this political gangster form that I loved him for, with that fierce delivery, the witty, humorous, like I said, often violent, dark lyrics all together over dirty beats and production. So I listened to the album, and these are my impressions of it. Impressions of Everything's Corrupt, an album by Ice Cube. Posted at sickmanvc.com, February 22nd, 2019. Everything's Corrupt is the new full-length studio effort from an artist with far too many aliases at this point to list, West Coast hip-hop legend Ice Cube. It's easy to take for granted so many things about Ice Cube and hard to summarize the scope of his influence in hip-hop in just a few sentences. It's very easy to forget his status as a pioneer of West Coast hip-hop and creator of an entire subgenre of hip-hop in the form of gangster rap. Cube's unheralded songwriting ability helped establish him as one of the original hip-hop ghostwriters, i.e. N.W.A., and his innate ability to tell vivid stories in the form of rap helped influence future and fellow legendary artists like the late B.I.G. and Nas, to name a few. He can also be remembered as the person who took battle rap and diss tracks to the next level with No Vaseline. Ice Cube was also a key player in the era of politically charged rap music and at the forefront and center of social cultural controversy with songs like Fuck the Police and albums like Death Certificate. All this was just from his music endeavors, and one could spend equal time discussing his other successful ventures, whether the pop culture crossover and uber-successful foray into Hollywood and entertainment, or his position as a preeminent African-American entrepreneur and entertainment mogul. This brief synopsis hardly does Cube's epic career justice, but is worth mentioning since an artist and influential figure of this magnitude still living and creating new work, and prolifically, I might add, should never be taken for granted. Whether they do release new stuff, it is always worth paying attention to, for better or worse. After such a long and multifaceted career, we ask, how does the new music stack up, and is it and the artist still relevant? In the midst of a tense political climate and troubled times in this country, it seems like the perfect opportunity for vintage Ice Cube to appear. For the once controversial figure turned cultural and entertainment icon, just the album's title, Everything Corrupt, insinuates that this might mark Cube's long-awaited return to the classic political/gangster-filled rap. However, the first half of the album is marred by musical production that just does not fit the direction and scope of Cube's lyrics and subject matter. The music production on the first 8 songs comes off as a generic attempt at achieving a more modern, mainstream rap sound and fails to fit the political subject matter. Songs like Arrest the President and Chase Down the Bully have so much potential in the context of great Ice Cube music but fail to deliver on their promise. The sparse electronic-driven production seems to force Cube to dumb down his delivery and lyrics, and at times even force him to rhyme words just to fit the beats. As a result, the social commentary is lost, and he does not scratch the surface of the subject matter. As a Cube fan, when you see the song titles, you have this hope of a return to sample-driven Sir Jinx or Bomb Squad-style tracks, feeling a vivid, aggressive, and witty storyteller espousing fiery politics. Think songs like I Wanna Kill Uncle Sam. Instead, you get cheap, generic trap music sounds that don't give the legendary artist a chance to flex his legendary skill set. Speaking of trap sounds, the remainder of the first half of Everything's Corrupt ironically have Cube rapping about the very subject matter of dope and drugs over even more, quote, not so dope, unquote, driven music. Even if the subject of drugs and dope were relevant to the overall theme of the album and were at the forefront of modern politics, which I believe they are, we don't get anywhere close to Cube classics on this same subject, like with Dope Man or What Can I Do? If you are patient enough to wade through the first half of Everything's Corrupt and lucky enough to make it to the Street Shed Tears, then the Super OG finally gets cooking and you get some of the vintage Cube you've been waiting for. It takes an overused West Coast sample on Street Shed Tears to bring Cube back into old form and away from the trappings, pun intended, of trap-style music. He continues his old-school approach with fellow West Coast legendary Too Short on Ain't Got No Haters, and the simplicity and nostalgia factor continue to shine. He gets experimental and does a sort of jacking for beats, but jacks different vernacular and styles and takes references from different eras on the ultra-cool Can You Dig It. With the new Funkadelic, he pays homage to P-Funk and channels his Bop Gun days. Here he draws from the most comparable album to Everything's Corrupt in Lethal Injection. This comparison can be made as far as the album being comprised of mostly cleaner, more mainstream production at that particular time period, yet still complements his classic skill set and also includes a share of vintage moments. The strength of the second half of the album continues even on his more mainstream effort, an NBA TV anthem-esque Non-Believers, where the beat choice and delivery finally seem to blend well, unlike the aforementioned first half album tracks. Finally, he closes out Everything's Corrupt on the political tip with the title track Good Cop, Bad Cop, with the title track and Good Cop, Bad Cop. A track that initially surfaced as one of the bonus tracks on the 25th anniversary edition of what I believe is Cube's magnum opus, Death Certificate. Here we're treated to a fiery Cube tackling the latest politics, and although it fails to reach the levels of the album it first appeared on, for the record, it was obvious then that it was not recorded during the Death Certificate sessions, but long after, it still gives fans a glimpse into what makes him so great as a rap artist and musician, for that matter. A good analogy for Cube's latest studio album, Everything's Corrupt, and something I wrote about a while back on my website, is The Older Athlete. This is a perfect analogy given that Cube is the founder and owner of a basketball league, the Big Three, which is comprised of older NBA players. In this case, Cube himself is the older athlete. By the time we trudge through the first half of the album, we're left realizing that it took quite a while for the older athlete to warm up and find their rhythm. It also seems as if the elder statesman is still busy trying to keep up with the young players instead of doing what they're best at. By the second half, we do catch glimpses of what made them great, and for brief moments at a time, they not only keep up, but they surpass their younger contemporaries. We are then left wondering if the older athlete can continually sustain this vintage form and become as dominant as they once were in an ever-changing landscape and evolving sport. On this album, Cube shows flashes of his old brilliance, but you just get that feeling that he might have lost a slight step, and at this point in a long and illustrious career, he may not be capable of creating an entire classic from beginning to end. However, since we're still dealing with an all-time great whose face belongs on the Mount Rushmore of hip-hop, a fall-off for him still puts him above most of his modern peers, especially when he is still motivated and when the conditions are just right.
The rest.
Yes, y'all. Since I last did an episode, I turned 42. February 19th, 2019, to be exact. On my website, sickmanvc.com, I explored that number 42 that I turned. Here's what I wrote and found out. Number 42, February 19th, 2019, sickmanvc.com. Number 42. Although I don't give a whole lot of credence to the idea of chronological age and its relevancy, I thought it would be fun on my birthday today to find some facts out about the number 42. Disclaimer, not fact-checked and internet-sourced. There is a Doctor Who episode titled 42 that lasted 42 minutes. There are 42 U.S. gallons in a barrel of oil. In the game of Risk, there are 42 territories. 42 is the atomic number of molybdenum, which is also the 42nd most abundant element. 42 degrees is the angle of a rainbow. If you search the answer to life, universe, and everything into Google, it will respond with 42. The default password expiration time for a Windows admin is 42 days. In 2004, the asteroid DA42 was renamed to 25924 Douglas Adams. Number 42 craft number is a very popular possible craft number in TF2. The book So Long and Thanks for All the Fish has 42 chapters. In the game Spore, you can get an item known as the Staff of Life that has 42 uses. In Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, the potion that Juliet takes will have an effect for 42 hours. 42% of the London Underground is underground. On page 42 of Frankenstein, Victor reveals he is able to make life. The world's first printed book, the Gutenberg Bible, has 42 lines per page. On page 42 of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Harry learns that he is a wizard. The Titanic was traveling at around 42 kilometers an hour when it hit the iceberg. Buzz Lightyear's ship is named 42. Theodore Roosevelt was 42 when elected into office. Chuck Yeager first broke the sound barrier at 42,000 feet. On page 42 of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Jonathan discovers he is a prisoner of the vampire. Holy Mackerel's default level is 42. A marathon course is 42 km plus a bit. Cell 42 in Alcatraz was home to Robert Stroud, who was transferred there in 1942, and after murdering a guard, he received 42 years of solitary. One of CERN's newer buildings is known as Building 42. The computer Watson has 42 threads around its avatar. Queen Victoria's husband died at age 42. They had 42 grandchildren. And Edward, I can't do Roman numerals that high, their great-grandson, abdicated at age 42. Elvis Presley died at age 42. Google's chief executive office is called Building 42. A single Big Mac has 42% of the recommended daily intakes of salt. Cricket, the game, has 42 laws. The three albums, Michael Jackson's Thriller, AC/DC's Back in Black, and Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, all lasted 42 minutes. The Type 42 vacuum tube was very popular in the 1930s. 42,000 balls were used in Wimbledon last year. The horse Nijinsky was 42 months old when it won the English Triple Crown, the Derby. In one episode of The Simpsons, Chief Wiggum wakes up to a question and answers 42. The 1970s song In the Summertime has a tempo of 42 beats per minute. Jackie Robinson, the first African-American to play Major League Baseball, had the jersey with the number 42.
This has been a Sick Man production, brought to you by VC. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time at the sweatshop. In a mouth, 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 in a mouth.